Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Thanks for watching the stream. US companies in the past have claimed that they had no idea that the products that they had made were benefiting from forced labour. Now the brand new Uyghur Forced Prevention Law makes the companies in the US responsible for making sure that none of their goods are made using forced labour. What difference could this make for consumers? And for the garment industry, that is our show today. We start with the US Senator Mark Rubio, who is incredibly enthusiastic about this new import ban. Here he is.
For far too long, companies like Nike and Apple and Amazon and Coca-Cola were using forced labor. They were benefiting from forced labor or sourcing from suppliers that were suspected of using forced labor. These companies, sadly, were making all of us complicit in these crimes.
It's a common sense bill that says if you make things in Xinjiang, then you need to prove that there is no slave labor involved in making it before you can bring that stuff into the United States.
This is a conversation that impacts all of us wherever we are in the world. If you're a consumer, this conversation is about you as well. Jump into YouTube, be part of our discussion. Let us meet your panel so you know who you're going to be talking to. Johar, Kerr, Sophie, so lovely to have all of you here on the stream. Johar, welcome back. Please remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Hello, my name is Johar Ilham. I am Forced Labour Project Coordinator at the Worker Rights Consortium. I am Uyghur.
Good to have you. Nice to have you back. Kerr, please say hello to our international viewers.
Yes, hi, my name is Kerr Gibbs. I've been working in China for the last 19 years. I'm currently at the University of San Francisco working on a book on China and the experience of foreign businesses there. I'm also the immediate past president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai.
Thanks for being with us, Kerr. And Sophie, welcome to the stream. Nice to have you. Tell everybody who you are, what you do.
Hi, I'm Sophie Tannhauser. I'm the author of Worn, A People's History of Clothing, and I'm a writer based in Brooklyn.
Good to have you. All right, so I'm going to show you a map, viewers, of the Xinjiang region of China. Have a look, because I'm going to get Johar to tell me about the human rights issues with this region, and then Kerr to tell us why it's such a big business region and industry goes to this area. So here we are, just going to map it out for you. Xinjiang. When you look at that, Johar, from a human rights perspective, briefly, because we've talked to you about this before, what is going on that there is now a law preventing American businesses from doing business there if forced labor is being used? Xinjiang.
For the past few years, the Chinese government has been implementing repressive policies in the Uyghur region in the names of poverty alleviation, combating religious extremism, and countering terrorism. But in fact, they've been implementing different, as I mentioned, different kinds of repressive policies like widespread state-sponsored forms of forced labor practices, forced sterilization, forced birth control, and gender-based sexual harassment and surveillance. I'm one of the victims of such repressive policies. I grew up having bugging devices in my home. Now I'm separated from my family members for the past 9 years. I have at least 4 to 5 family members in my family are in locked up in a prison or in a camp.
All right, Kerr, I'm going to just remind our audience what the region is, where we're talking about, again, on that map so they can see it. Tell us from a business and industry perspective, what does Xinjiang mean for China and for the world?
Yeah, Xinjiang, I mean, it's an enormous place, right? I mean, it's got a GDP of about $200 billion a year. It is the largest province in China. It's also about the size of Mexico. And I think this is an important point because some of the things that we're going to be talking about here around the human rights issues, which definitely exist. I mean, the human rights issues in Xinjiang have been well documented by scholars and other reputable organizations. And Beijing so far has not really addressed the issues. I would, though, like to address, you know, in the lead up, you know, you quoted, you showed Senator Rubio's comments, and I would take issue with that. I mean, again, Xinjiang is an enormous place. There's a lot of different things happening there. So, you know, most of the American businesses that have been operating in China for many years operate at a very high level of ethical standards and have done made great efforts at auditing their supply chains, Beijing thus far has been doing things that are, let's say, less than cooperative in the sense that they've been restricting activities of some of the audit firms that would be involved in making sure that there's no forced labor in the supply chains.
I think it's important to note, though, that if you can't have an independent auditor come in, it really is impossible to say that forced labor isn't present. And that's one of the things that rights groups have pointed to in the past, that if you can't have an independent auditor come in, it's not possible to say that you know what's happening on the ground.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I mean, and having independent, transparent third-party auditors is really critical. And you know, organizations like the Better Cotton Initiative. And so I think what's happened is since foreign companies have not been able to get that kind of visibility and transparency, they've unfortunately had to withdraw from Xinjiang entirely. And I think that's unfortunate because, again, there's a lot of different things happening in Xinjiang. It's an enormous place. And again, the forced labor may be happening in certain parts of it, but to sort of punish the entire province for the actions that may be happening in some parts of it it doesn't really seem logical.
Johar, I am just looking here at a spokesperson from a Chinese government official. What is there to prevent when forced labor is non-existent in Xinjiang? U.S. Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act is built on lies and is designed to go after Xinjiang's strong economic sectors such as agriculture, solar industry, to impoverish and destabilize the region. So, Johar.
As earlier other two speakers mentioned, that there is no, the due diligence auditing is not possible in the Uyghur region. The auditors, the moment they land in the airport in the Uyghur region, they are locked up as well. Workers cannot speak to auditors or investigators freely. But still, there have been survivors successfully made out of the region and have skipped to Central Asia or to the U.S. We have forced labor camp survivors who have testified on their experiences, how they have they were forced to work making gloves or forced to teach in a camp or forced to make other types of products, whether it's sweaters or shoes. There are forced labor survivors out there that can testify on their and shown their evidence on how forced labor does exist in the Uyghur region. And also there are various reports that were released from Sheffield Hallam University's the Laundering Cotton report, the Under Broad Daylight report, and also other recent reports on PVC, and all documented how the global supply chains are heavily complicit in the Uyghur forced labor scheme.
So we want
to I think this actually goes to Sophie's point, if you don't mind me jumping in.
Sophie's
point was talking about, you know, the audit trails. I mean, so it's one thing for Beijing to simply deny it, but they need to provide that level of transparency so that we can see what's actually happening there. One other thing to point out, I mean, Juar is talking about the situation in Xinjiang, and I think that's the one that's getting the most attention right now, and it's the issue that has the most direct impact on global business. But I think it's important to also point out that there's other human rights issues in China as well. I mean, let's not forget about that, right? I mean, China has imprisoned human rights lawyers and others who've been defending people in China who are advocating for, you know, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, involved in land disputes with the government. So there's a lot of other issues there as well.
I'm going to bring in a new voice, Sophie. I'm going to come straight to you if you wouldn't mind. This is Doug Barry. Doug talked to us a little bit earlier. He's the comms and publications vice president of the U.S.-China Business Council. We were wondering about enforcement. How do we enforce a law that makes companies responsible for what and how their products are made, making sure they're not using forced labor? This is what Doug told us earlier.
The good part so far has been that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Office, which is responsible for enforcing the law, has done so in a very targeted and focused manner. It's not going to be that they're going to grab everything that comes from China and scrutinize it for forced labor. So the good part is that it's limited and focused, that there is a law in effect, and the U.S. companies are determined to follow it, and they are fully supportive of following it.
Sophie, Doug's sounding quite positive there, that this law could actually work and it is being enforced.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of hopefulness and there should be. There's a lot of unknowns, how strictly it will be enforced, what kind of transparency we'll have from Customs and Border Protection to allow the civil sector to see how well it's being enforced and whether or not it will become active globally. So currently, if a batch of goods is detained, the company importing those goods has the ability to simply export them to a country where this ban isn't in play. So there's a question there of how global the reach of this ban will be.
I agree. I'd like to add on that.
Yeah.
Great point, Sophie. That is why it's so crucial for other countries to also apply other countries to pass similar laws and for companies around the world to apply single unified standard, just like for their markets in the U.S. They should not be hypocritical and pretend to be caring about human rights in the U.S. and redirect their shipments to Canada, to Australia, to EU, and ending up making those countries a dumping ground for forced labor tinted goods.
I'm going to bring in a voice. Yes, you go first, Kurt, and then I'm going to put something to you. Go ahead.
Sure, let me just make a quick point. I think that's true, that there has to be sort of a unified approach and a multilateral approach, because that's true. You know, with these goods, especially since we're talking about cotton, that's an input, so that can be easily shipped to, say, Vietnam or Bangladesh, and then these products end up coming into the EU or United States. Anyway, I would agree with the part that this law will be implemented for sure, and companies have no choice but to comply. However, I would actually point out that I actually would disagree. I don't think it's going to impact. I don't think it's going to protect the rights of Uyghurs, and I don't think it's going to stop forced labor in China. And here's why: the way that the law has been drafted, it's using this thing called a rebuttable presumption. And what this means is, again, back to Senator Rubio's comments, they're just making this assumption that everything in coming from Xinjiang is coming there being made with forced labor, and that's really just not the case. Especially, and the importers are being forced to prove that forced labor is not being used, meaning that they have to prove a negative, which is actually next to impossible. And let me just explain that with an example, if I can. So for example, if I've run a red light, that's a traffic violation. It should be, if I'm guilty of that, it should be easy enough to prove. What if I'm asked to prove that I have not run a red light any time in the last month? How would I go about doing that?
All right, let's take the analogy back to the Uyghurs. Johar, how do you prove it? How do you prove that goods are being made using forced labor if China won't allow people into the Xinjiang region, which is typical behavior of buyers? Buyers go to see where their products are produced, how they're produced, how the labor works. That is classic behavior if you've got a production area outside of your own country or even in your country. So, to Kerr's point, how do you prove it?
Indeed, it is very difficult. That is why supply chain transparency is so crucial. Mm-hmm. And that is why it is very important for companies to know where they're sourcing from, who are working to make those products. And then there are companies who are able to disclose those data because they have been tracing their supply chain since the beginning, before this law has passed, before forced labor, Uyghur forced labor issues had ever existed. In the past, they have been doing a good job, and a lot of those companies have not been heavily impacted by the passage of this law. And if such brands can do it, that means other brands. It is feasible for other brands to do it as well. It's just a matter of cost, a matter of real. And it is difficult. Of course, we cannot deny that it is going to be heavily impacting some industries that have not been doing a good job in verifying and monitoring their supply chains and tracing their data, tracing their raw materials.
Sophie, it's almost as if the brands just like, let's see what we can get away with. Let's see if we can do this. It's going to save us so much money if we don't have to make sure that our products are made ethically. Sophie?
I think it's very important to acknowledge what a huge role the U.S. garment industry in particular has had in creating the situation in Xinjiang as it now stands. In 1992, so 30 years ago, Congress passed a bill that would have forced China to improve its human rights record if it wanted to gain preferential access to U.S. markets. George H.W. Bush vetoed that bill under intense pressure from retail executives at companies like Gap and Kmart and Limited, who wanted to continue to be able to access cheap Chinese-made garments. Since 2006, the U.S. has imported by far more garments than any other country on earth. And since 2018, it's been really hard to ignore that there are internment camps active in Xinjiang, and yet companies are still doing business there. So it's a long time coming, and I think the U.S. it should be at the forefront of the fight against forced labor in Xinjiang, because we've really been at the forefront of throwing billions of dollars into a region where this is happening.
I am wondering if we're at a stage where we're grappling with global accountability for how our products are being made. Can I just do a quick poll and just check with you as to who's responsible? Is it consumers, the companies or corporations, or the government? Sophie?
All three. I think that because corporations are the one profiting from this, it should be their duty foremost. But they operate within structures created by the government. And consumers, of course, provide that profit ultimately. So yeah. I think if I had to rate them, I would say corporations, governments, and then consumers at the bottom.
I very much agree with what Sophie just said. I think the U.S. government had to pass such a law because companies have not been doing their jobs. If they have honestly disclosed their supply chain data, have honestly not been complicit in forced labor. To be honest, there were reports on forced labor had been out since early 2018, 2019. WROs have been passed since the companies have more than enough time to be warned on that laws might be coming, but they chose to continue to stay and profit from Uyghur forced labor. Whose fault is that? The companies wanted to profit off this Uyghur forced labor, and now they should not be complaining that this law is that is going to be enforced rigorously. They should not. They don't have the right to complain on that.
I would agree with, you know, all three. I mean, everybody, all the constituencies have a responsibility to make sure that forced labor is not in their supply chains. I would certainly agree with that. I would put a little more emphasis, though, on the responsibility of governments, and especially the government in Beijing, you know, to provide more transparency, because I think there's a misunderstanding here about what companies really desire. Companies desire to have clean supply chains. They want to be free of forced labor. Everybody agrees about forced labor, prison labor, slave labor.
Can I just ask you, because you're so experienced when you're talking about companies and working in the Xinjiang region, you know this area intimately. If companies say it, but then don't do anything, is that commitment? Is that accountability? If you say that they really care, can you give us an example of how much they care?
Well, again, I mean, it's a question of transparency. Is right now Beijing has actually limited access to the region. They have restricted the activities of some of these third-party supply chain audit firms. And so they've made it very difficult for foreign companies to operate within Xinjiang. So to me, that's the issue. It's an issue of transparency.
So they would do something
if
they could get to Xinjiang. So knowing what they know right now, that there's a possibility that perhaps some of their products are made using forced labor, what do they do, Kerr?
Oh, they withdraw.
They withdraw.
And that's what we're going to see here as a response to the UFLPA. what we're going to see here is, again, because the law is next to impossible to comply with, what we're going to see here is we're going to see companies withdraw from Xinjiang entirely. And again, I look at that, it's a shame because there's so much, it's such a large province and there's so many different things happening there. Mm-hmm. But also in response to the law, there's going to be a lot of confusion and delays that because as a practical matter, it's still unclear what the Customs and Border Patrol guidance, the guidance is there, but it's still unclear as to how to exactly to comply.
Let me bring
in
some thoughts.
We're going to see interruptions in supply chains.
I hear you, Kerr. Let me bring in some thoughts from our viewers watching on YouTube right now. I'm going to share them with you, Sophie. Ricardo Paul, boycott is an option. Is it? And then David says, it's not just garments. It's Tesla, Apple, Nike. Sophie.
Absolutely, it's not just garments. And I mean, solar panels are a huge component of this, as are tomatoes. But I think the boycott question is interesting. I mean, a historical parallel that occurs to me here is European textile manufacturers were completely reliant on slave cotton from the U.S. in the 19th century when suddenly the Civil War interrupted their supply. What did they do? Russia rushed into Central Asia to colonize it, to grow a supply of raw cotton. The British intensified their control over India. So basically, they lost a source of raw cotton, and they just created human rights crises and ecological crises elsewhere. So are we going to see brands now just intensify ecological distress in other parts of the world as they rush to find other sources of raw cotton? That's a real concern for me, and I think it's why it's important to think beyond Xinjiang and think ecologically and from a labor perspective about the global trace of cotton in general.
I'm going to bring in Chloe Cranston, and I'm going to come straight to you, Johar, but have a listen to Chloe first of all, because this isn't just about the activism you got to have one law passed. It has to be a bigger picture. Here's Chloe, and then Johar, just come immediately off the back of the video.
Truly put pressure on the Chinese government to end the system of abuses, we need to see other governments around the world introduce comparable laws. The absence of such laws in other countries is particularly creating the risk that these markets become dumping grounds for Uyghur forced labor goods. And this is particularly the case given that under the US law, if a company has its shipment seized, it can simply re-export that shipment to another market. And that's why we're calling on other governments, in particular the EU, which is the world's largest single market, to introduce laws which ban the import of forced labor goods.
I very much agree with Chloe's point on preventing other countries from a dumping ground. I also wanted to go back to what Femi earlier mentioned, whether cotton is the only sector that we should be caring about. So the cotton industry is the most talked about because it's closest, I guess it's closest to consumers' lives because everybody buy clothing, doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. And also 84% of the cotton production of China is from the Uyghur region. That is 22% of the global cotton output. But at the same time, as mentioned, solar industry, and that is the key material for the solar industry, polysilicon. That is 45% of the world's polysilicon is produced in the Uyghur region, and also tech, hair products, tomatoes, any sector. At this juncture, and no responsible corporations from any sector should be sourcing from the Uyghur region. Yes, indeed, there are many things that is happening in the Uyghur region, but what we do know is that there are over 1.8 million Uyghur people are locked up in re-education camps, are going through vocational training schools, are locked up in factories to working conditions that strongly indicate forced labor. And the Chinese government is even proud and advertising it and calling it a so-called for poverty alleviation, while a lot of those people who are locked up are either medical doctors, a dentist, professors like my father, or nurses, people who had lives and families and jobs before.
Okay. I am going to leave our conversation with Roshan, who actually has a thought for our viewers who are consumers around the world. Here she is.
My own sister, Dr. Gulshan Abbas, who was taken as a hostage to punish me for exposing China's genocide policies, could be making the shirt that's on your back. And the Uyghur professors, famous writers, successful business people, and the pop stars could be picking your cotton. There are perpetrators and enablers on this genocide. And when you use the company's products, and those companies who are using Uyghur forced labor, making all of you the enablers.
I want to show you one more thing, and it's here on my laptop. It's a Uyghur forced labor database. Go to www.org/Uyghur-China-forced-labor-database. You put a little section in here, you put the company name in there. It will tell you if the goods or the company has forced labor connections in the Xinjiang region of China. Thank you, guests, for being part of today's show. I will see you next time. Take care, everybody.